when you get inside those walls at a prison or even working at a court or in a school, you get inside those walls, the smallest things can seem like the most important things in the whole world.
Yeah.
And I think when you get out and you see the world and you get away from it for a little while, you realize, you know, is it really that big a deal? You know, some of these things that happen. And I see that even in the prison today, you know. You know, I work with some of these young guys that are so fired up and love what they do and they're excited about it. And I just sit down.
Yeah.
Let me handle this.
Yeah.
And I go and I talk to somebody and I settle their ass down a little bit. But that could have been so much different 20 years ago. And so that's probably, for me, that's been the biggest change, I guess, or the biggest thing I've learned is just, you know, settle down, you know, let people settle down.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can throw gas on the fire and just make it a whole lot worse. So.
You're tuned into Totally Unrelated with Jay Snyder and Adrian Cosby. Enjoy.
Coming in hot, sitting here with Jay Snyder, and I'll let Jay introduce this episode.
I want to introduce our very special guest, Mr. Shane Goodman. Shane, how are you, buddy?
Thank you, doing great.
Brief backstory. Shane was me and Jared's probation officer from...
birth?
From birth, basically, but I know for sure I was 15 when we were in Nelsonville. And you were certainly there then. what year did you become a probation officer?
94.
Yeah, we got into the law business about the same time, I guess. Yeah, it's just same. Different sides of
different
it.
Different sides of it. Same industry.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I think I was 95, I think, is when I was in Nelsonville.
What'd you do to get yourself to Nelsonville?
A blown out of proportion, aggravated burglary. Yeah, by the way, thanks for welcoming us into your home. All right.
Yeah.
But, think about the irony of 20 years ago, if you were in my home, I'd have to call the police.
Start now, taking pictures, inventory, yeah. And stuff. Is everything the same, honey?
Now I'm happy to have you here.
But so you were, also you were a truant officer at the high school. I remember that. What year did you do that? I think I had already quit school by the time you were a truant officer.
Yeah, I actually, that was part of my job at the court. At one point, Judge Michael had worked out a contract with the school where they shared my salary, I think, and so I spent part of the day at the school and part of the day at the court.
Because I tell you know what, like, sucks more than having a probation officer? Having your probation officer be the truant officer when you don't go to school.
Yeah, especially if you're double-dipping in both of those categories. So what was your first run-in? What was your first interaction?
With Shane?
Yeah.
I don't know, because I remember Bob Walton was our probation officer, and then he went to the clerk of courts. And did you take over after
Bob? A short time with Bob and learned a few things from him, and then he left and kind of took over me and Buster Hall and a couple other folks were in and out during those years.
And then how old were you? Because you were pretty young... For a probation officer, right?
Probably looks our age now.
Yeah, I would have been 20 or 21 probably when I got hired at the court, so...
And did you find that being so young, did you have to, like, really throw your weight around to get...
That's more a question for you than this.
Well, let me ask this before we get down that path. What led you to become a probation officer? What were you doing prior to that? And was that, like, something that you were... Like, was this a natural progression? Or was it, like, something like, oh, shit, I just found out I'm a probation officer?
Right. Well, I'd started in college, and college wasn't really a good fit for me. And so I went to... the police academy.
Okay.
And
I forgot about that.
Yeah. One day there's all kinds of shit I forgot about. We'll probably remember here soon. But But I happened to run into Judge Michael one day. He asked, you know, somebody who'd been a family friend, and he asked what I was up to these days and told him, and next thing I know, I'm driving around in a car with Bob Walton. So
okay, it's, yeah.
You know, I started, I think, maybe working part-time, and then maybe when Bob left, you know, became kind of the full-time probation officer there.
And so. Then, so you started out at about 21, and you're dealing with kids that are, like, what age groups?
Pretty much 13 to 17, probably. You know, I think at that time, all my friends were police officers at that point. You know, I'd been through the police training and was spending time at the police department, the sheriff's office, and now working at the court. And so, you know, kind of grew up pretty fast in my younger adult life, I guess.
And, yeah, I think I've seen that happen.
And that wasn't part of the plan.
Yeah, I've seen that happen before. Now, would you say that you became friends with people that you were working with or in the academy with? Or was it also a situation where once you become a police officer, your friends that aren't police officers or in law enforcement tend to put more distance?
Yeah, I think at that point in my life, a lot of my friends were off at college.
Okay.
They were off somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was just a natural progression that, you know, at that point, my interest, you know, was law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And so I was hanging out at the police station. And
it wasn't just a job. It was a hobby
interest. I really loved it at that point. And so I never planned to be a police officer. I never planned to be a probation officer. And all of a sudden, I'm 21 years old, and those are the things that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And everybody that I've surrounded myself with is in that same line of work. So, again, it wasn't the direction that I thought I was going to go, but, you know, I had a nice opportunity to work with Judge Michael and appreciated the opportunity, so took
Did it pay better than most of the jobs in Jackson at that point? Were you for your age, were you making...
I think for my age, I was probably making pretty good money.
Yeah.
And, you know, certainly I didn't have family and expenses and, you know, all those things to worry about.
Right.
So at that point, I was doing something that I liked to do and, you know, making pretty good money at it. So, you know, I felt pretty good about it. The longer I was in it, the more I hated my life and hated everybody around me. But
that's what I was gonna say. Is like how long did it start to beat down on your view of humanity?
Yeah, well, probably pretty fast.
Yeah,
you know, I had a pretty dim outlook on society at that point, I think. And
going in, or do you think it changed? Like, was it already pretty pessimistic and it became more pessimistic, or were you pretty kind of like 50-50 and then it went very pessimistic?
Yeah, I'd say it went south pretty fast.
Yeah.
Probably more working in law enforcement than necessarily the courts. I mean, when I was working at the courts, it was very odd that I was surrounded by people like Buster Hall, who had been a lifetime law enforcement officer, and then Judge Michael, who had very different ideas about how to work with youth, and you know, ultimately he was the boss. So, you know, I had probably had some good influence in Judge Michael pulling the reins back. Maybe sometimes, I mean, at that point, our probation staff was primarily law enforcement minded people, and I think it drove the judge crazy sometimes. But
he's more of like a, would you say, like rehabilitation or
absolutely
diversion
sure
minded?
And yeah, I think it just I was fortunate, I think, to have him in my life and to understand not everybody's a horrible person.
Right. We got to judge them as individuals.
Because I mean, sometimes, you know, working, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night with law enforcement, it seems like everybody's a horrible person.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, most of those people are,
Yeah. Well, I think I can't imagine what that would be like where, imagine it's similar to being a Walmart employee, not even just a Walmart employee, but imagine working the customer service desk at Walmart where people are, even if they're legitimately trying to return something, they're probably already a little bit upset that they're even having to come back and wait in a long line. And then sometimes I see these customer service people just be pleasant as hell. You know what I mean? And I'm like, how do you go to Target?
What is wrong with you?
Yeah, you could be doing anything right now. I got warrants. So when you're 21 and you're dealing with these kids, I feel like when I was 21, I was still behaving mostly as if I was 13 or 14 myself. I don't have a history like Jay. I didn't get in trouble. I did have a reckless youth, but it never caught up to me, and I probably wasn't. I've definitely never broken anything or, you know, did anything like that. So I wonder, you went into the police academy, and that's that adds 10 years onto anybody that does it, as far as like, you got to grow up fast because you're going to be dealing with people that are older than you.
Yeah.
You're going to be dealing with people that are younger than you, and you have to be kind of like right down the middle.
Yeah. I can imagine having to deal with that. And it, just being a police officer that young, you know my dad, it's like, dude, like,
him still shitting yelling, you ain't writing me no ticket.
Hey, Howard, look, you need to be quiet so I can talk right now. Just like, oh, he was such a dick.
So did you find like you had like kind of like more authority dealing with the kids than you did like out on the street at 2 o'clock at night? Or was it still always just breaking balls trying to get people to...
Yeah, probably at that point it was probably, I mean, it was a learning experience, because learning how to talk to people, learning how to, you know, frankly, like anything else in life, to get people to do what you want them to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't all that much different dealing with people out on the street as it was, you know, dealing with kids. I mean, the bigger issue with kids was usually parents dealing with, you know, dealing with crazy mom or crazy dad, and, you know, trying to... These are folks who would come in and say one thing a lot of times, but they were actually doing something completely different.
Right.
And so it's pretty hard, I think, to help a kid out when they see mom or dad and they're, you know, blatantly lying about what's going on in their home. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, pinning shit on the kids.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's crazy to think, but that's what people do. And so I think at that point, you know, at 21, 22 years old, I was probably trying to, you know, as Jay mentioned, I guess maybe trying to throw my weight around, establish my authority a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it was pretty, probably perceived as pretty hard, I would imagine, as far as, you know, no nonsense, not going to put up the bullshit today kind of guy. And, you know, over the years, you know, I guess we'll probably get to that, but over the years, I think I've probably transformed into... to somebody that's able to deal with people a lot more effectively, and realize that I don't have to be a big guy or have a big voice to be able to get people to do what I want them to do.
Sure, sure. More flies with honey, sort of a thing. I think that that's also just a getting older kind of a thing. I know that for me, dealing with my own son or kids, I worked with kids a lot before I became a comedian, and I think I had 14 different jobs in early childhood education or after school care. I was a lifeguard, I taught swim lessons and things, and I always lead kids with a very militaristic drill sergeant sort of demeanor, because I, especially starting off, because I feel like there's nowhere to go if you start off real sweet and friendly and soft. If you start off hard, you can be soft one time. You know what I mean? You can have a moment of softness. But if you start off soft and things get out of hand, there's no coming back from that. There's not. Then you're just a jerk. And so I always feel like I never have any kind of animosity towards a teacher or anybody that's in a position of authority when they show up for the first time with real authority. You know, like some people be like, oh, who the hell does this guy think he is? You know what I mean? But I'm always like, oh, this is how you're supposed to do it.
Yeah, you
know,
have to establish it.
Yeah, I understand the dance. Let's dance. I got pulled over by these West Virginia cops where there's like 6 patrol cars around my Prius. I said, let's dance. You know, I'm not going to make this any harder on you guys than you want it to be. You know what I mean? And if you want it to go hard, I don't want it to. So I'm focused on de-escalation.
Yeah. I know who's going to take the brunt of this tasering if this goes wrong here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not tit for tat when it comes to the tasers. You use yours and then I'll see what I can do with mine.
And how many years were you a probation officer?
Did that for about 8 years.
About 8 years.
What'd you go into after that?
Well, after that, I went into business full time and owned several businesses and did that for... probably the next 12 to 14 years, something like that. So
how long into your was it like the last 2 years or the last 4 years that you were planning on going into business after, like, you, like, did you have a plan for after probation?
Not really. I think I had purchased a business in 1997, so I was doing that in the evenings and you know, working this job during the day, and that business just grew more than I anticipated that it would, and so it got to the place where I could go full time mm-hmm. into business, and I was more interested in mm-hmm. that at that point than, I mean, you gotta think, are you from a small town?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In a small town, you know, you don't call and order pizza when you're the probation officer, and you know, these folks folks are working, you know, you don't go in.
Give me a good haircut. Yeah.
You don't go through the Taco Bell and
yeah.
You
know,
God,
I never thought about that.
Three soft tacos. It's mm-hmm. for Goodman.
Yeah. Why is my name written on these tacos?
Yeah. So, you know, it kind of got to the place where, after a while, I was just, you know, living in a small town. Everywhere I go, I'm running into people that I've had on probation or
mm-hmm. arrested or
something. And it, you know, and even, you know, 20 years later, you know, I still run into that all the time. I mean, you go in Walmart and, you know, mom comes up and wants to tell me how good Johnny's doing, and, you know, it's, so you're never...
Who the hell's Johnny?
I have no freaking idea.
Yeah.
Like, you want to talk to me about Jay and Jared Snyder?
Yeah.
I know exactly who
the celebrities. We know the celebrities.
But, yeah, you had, was Robbie one of your,
I think Buster dealt with Robbie the most, but...
But I remember
during that time,
because when I was in that rehab in Nelsonville, I remember that's when he got shot in the face with a 12 gauge.
Right. And, I was there.
Yeah, and so
I didn't shoot him.
were you a police officer then?
Yeah.
Did you go on that call?
Yeah.
And when you saw that, he's like, "I told you this was gonna happen, you little dipshit." do you remember one of our first podcasts we talked about Robbie face tattooed himself out of upper management?
Yes.
So he, I mean, he was always a wild son of a bitch. I mean, even...
How much older... Was he older than you?
Nah, he... maybe a year, but I mean, we were in the same grade and all that stuff. He's like...
Yeah.
Maniac.
One of the few drive-by shootings you'll see in Jackson, I guess.
Wow.
Somebody capped him out of the back of a pickup truck, if I remember right.
Oh, he's dead?
No. He lived. No, he just got shot in the face with a 12-gauge.
Oh, but a good guy, young. You know what
But it was like a buckshot or whatever. So
okay.
It was just like
lots of holes.
We call that getting Dick Cheney'd.
So I was in Nelsonville this rehab, and so they brought him up there because he had went through that program as well, and it was kind of, I guess, like a safe haven, right? Like, he wasn't in the regular population with the rest of us. He kind of had his own wing. I guess they put him up there to figure out what the hell they were doing, because he must have been a minor when he got shot. I mean, like all the greats.
Yeah.
But I remember having to help him shave, and I'm squeezing BBs out of his face like they're pimples. And I was like, that dude was the craziest son of a bitch. But I woke up, it couldn't have been more than 2 months ago, and he was beating on the door. Not what you're expecting to wake up. I mean, whoa, bro.
Yeah. Slow down.
Yeah. I ain't had my coffee, and you look like you haven't had your meth yet. So let's
rewind.
Yeah. Let's have a duel. Let's both put our backs to each other, take 10 steps away, and
I'll
you know,
the
you
door.
Can go. And he's like, "Oh man, know anybody hiring?" I was like, no. He's like, "Can't even get a job down there. I got this fucking face tattoo."
Yeah. What have you done now?
Didn't even notice. Yeah. Didn't even notice.
Oh, you do, don't you? Huh? That's nice. That's a fancy one.
Oh, I thought, I thought that was just the best mole I've ever seen in my life. I thought he was born with that.
You get you a doily over top of that, it'd be a lot more easy to hire you. What age do you start seeing tattoos on these kids? Back then, because back then it probably wasn't as prevalent. I've noticed recently that you can get a tattoo in almost any of these small towns at a number of different places. But when I was a kid, you had to go you had to like know somebody that knew somebody to get a tattoo. But I see kids.
I don't remember that. Jay might remember better. How old were you when you got your first tattoo?
Oh no, I was an adult.
Oh, okay.
I know that because I woke up in Ross County Jail the next day with it.
That's a story.
But, Robbie, I never remember him not having a tattoo. I think that some bitch was born with him. I'll be
honest. Tattooed in the womb.
Yeah, I thought they. I think they just branded him with one. As soon as he was born.
You're gonna be trouble. What was his? Were his parents in trouble too all the time, or was he just a wild child?
I actually can't remember. I mean, I remember his mom, but I don't remember what her story was or anything. Yeah, I mean.
I do remember. I guess we'll just say he had a difficult upbringing. And, you know, like a lot of people that we dealt with. I mean, you know, some better than others. But
were there like really? Did you have like a couple weird ones where the parents were like very stable, but the kids were just off the chain?
I remember one guy specifically who always baffled my mind that, you know, his parents seemed so normal and. His life seemed like it could be so normal.
Yeah.
And he was the craziest nutcase of a kid. You know, maybe it was medical. I mean, certainly drugs at one point.
Self-induced drugs. Yeah.
But I think as you really get into those situations, sometimes things aren't always what they appear to be also.
Sure.
And so a lot of times people can put on a pretty good show, but As you really get to know families and you're in their homes and you are talking to them at midnight when their kid just got picked up by the police, you know, you learn a lot more about people than it seemed like.
When they're not prepared for you to stop by.
When they come into your office on a scheduled meeting, it's a lot different than showing up at their house.
Waking them up at midnight.
Yeah. I guess I never really thought about it like that because I definitely knew kids that had seemingly stable upbringings, home, nice homes and everything like that, but the kids were just... I had one friend whose brother is a lawyer. I mean, very successful, very driven all the way through high school, played every sport, you know, just very straight arrow. But his little brother was like just a hellraiser. He was younger than me, but he was a bad influence on me. And I couldn't really quite figure out what it was. But I think in some regards, it was just not being able to live up to his older brother's standards. And so he was like rebelling against all of it. And I think also trying to figure out what's going on in the head of a kid who's under the age of 15. Even Judge Michael talked about that. It's like,
yeah,
good luck. Yeah. I mean, for me, in my earliest like run-ins with the hoodlums in my neighborhood and the kids, when I started running with kind of a bad crowd, I was still considered the good kid of the kids that ran with a bad crowd. Like, even the guys I ran with were like, you don't want to come with us on what we're about to go do. Okay. Which I thought was very empathetic, but that's also part of maybe growing up in a small town as opposed to like...
What's up? What? Come on, guy, I can party.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I knew when I lived in California, those guys were somewhat empathetic, but it was much more like, if you don't get down like us, you can't hang out with us.
Yeah.
And I found my way.
I learned to get down.
I learned to dance a little bit. But I think also my parents weren't overly protective. You know what I mean? I was like, come home when it's dark. You know what
just
I mean?
Just come home.
Yeah, just come home when you feel like it. And I think even when I did push the boundaries of good taste, the repercussions weren't overly severe. You know what I mean? They were always pretty mild. Like, you know, think about how it made us feel. It was always like an empathetic sort of punishment. Like, right. You just sit there and you think about what we had to go through.
I'm like, oh, all right.
I'm like, oh, I'm still drunk, but I'll do it.
This is my punishment. That's fine. But look, I'm the kid. I'm the 11-year-old here. I just,
That's crazy. So you guys, what would be a typical situation you'd get arrested or just
not Ozzy Osbourne? I'll tell you that.
Yeah. No concerts. When would you see Shane? You'd get would you already be in trouble, or would it be you skip school?
Kind of, because at that time I had just got out of the rehab in Nelsonville, so we had like that meeting once a month or something like that. Where
probably more often than once a month.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well,
just like an adult probation situation.
Just like adult. But
were you going? You piss in a cup and all that stuff?
Oh yeah, I failed them nearly every. Oh yeah, I was doing that every week. And at one point, me and Jeremy and Jared, we had like not a competition going or whatever, but I remember the lady that used to give the drug test said that they leveled it or they measured it to a level of like up to 150 or whatever, and like 1 week Jared's like 148. She's like, it's the highest one we've ever seen.
What of what?
Just weed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so then next week, Jeremy comes back. He maxed out.
He broke
his head. But then another kind of weird twist is the lady that would give us the drug test married my cousin, right? So it's like, and they had been married for 10 years at this point or whatever, and so... we thought that we were going to be able to manipulate that situation. Mm-hmm. And she's like,
boys.
This is my bread and butter. You sons of bitches.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she'd show up at the house like, all right, you got to take a drink. I ain't got to pee. that's all right. Grab some water.
Yeah.
So then you're sitting there, still ain't got to piss. It's been 4 hours. You got to.
Yeah. Eyes turned yellow. Would you ever try to take anything to pass a drug test?
No, never had that much common sense, nor the resources.
Or the resources. You got to have a head shop or somebody.
I mean, there's one in Chillicothe called Waterbed and stuff, and I'm sure that they sell all those kind of things.
But you're young, you can't get out to Chillicothe.
Yeah, I mean, we go there for our whip. It's not to pass a drug test.
That's actually money I could have been spending on more drugs or something like that. So did you see the results of the drug test, or were you like already in office? Would it be instant, or would it take a week to come back?
No, at that time, it's probably instant now, but at that time it would take maybe a week. I can't remember, but I know that it wasn't the day of, because it was like, all right, just going to get this over with. I got a couple more days left, you know.
So he fails a drug test. You come pick him up, or what? How you make a call?
Yeah, I mean, it may be. I mean, it's probably a matter of making a call, telling him to come to the office. He probably won't show up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a matter of going down into Diamond, and you know, every Snyder. every house down there is a Snyder. So
that's actually Browning. It's my mom's side, but
Brownings.
But there are some Snyders mingled in different breed of Snyders.
Yeah,
there,
yeah.
But they're all related.
Yeah.
You go down.
Hearing those whistles.
Go down into Diamond. You know, half of them love these kids, and half of them hate them. So, half of them are pointing, saying,
"Yeah, you know that? He's under the trailer.
Still ain't got my guns back. That little son of a bitch.
You found my guns."
But
see him come pouring down through there. It just sounds like Clint is here to
tumbleweed. So then you fail a drug test. Then you go. You get locked up.
A lot of times it was community service. And I remember one. I remember this is like I was probably 14, 15 years old, and used to make us put these bright vests on. You'd walk us around, because Jackson used to have like these cruising blocks.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm sure you're familiar. Like everybody just goes in a circle for 9 hours. You know,
we didn't do that in my town because it was just too small. But Springfield had that, and when the first time I saw it, I was like, "This is the greatest thing I've ever seen." I mean, they just drive down the street, pull into a parking lot, turn around, go back up the other side.
Well, Jackson, I mean, you could just literally just go in blocks.
Just go blocks in a circle.
And then you'd switch and come back around the other way.
Well, I'm seeing the other side of the car. Watch both of that. So a lot of litter out there? You're the street sweepers?
So we would go out and we'd have these, like, we'd look like highway workers. But we're all 13, 14 years old with little... go to hell, little Boris mustaches. I think it was still SA at that time, and now it's Speedway, but it was an SA.
Yeah, Super America.
And I was walking, I pick up what I think is an empty pack of cigarettes, and I pick it up, and there's about 8 pre rolled joints in it.
Oh, wow.
I was like, got it!
Yes!
This backfired.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah.
I'm rehabilitated!
Yeah.
I've never seen Jay pick up so much trash.
I'm going to have to hide from Kelly next Tuesday, I'll tell you that.
Not only was he picking up cans and bottles and stuff, he was looking inside of them.
Weirdest thing. Picking up, checking scratch off. I'm like, hell, I already hit once today.
That's weird. I had a dream that I found somebody's wallet. and it had a $6 scratch off ticket in it.
I think that's my wallet, bro.
and it had won for $6. And I was like, I better find the owner of this wallet.
Yeah, I need to do the right thing.
Yeah, he needs this money.
I need to put him out of misery.
You got the scratch off in your billfold side of your wallet.
Oh, yeah, where your credit cards go.
Yeah, you know, this is good. This is bona fide, legal tender.
I'm getting cash right there. Well,
buy six more tickets and got some potential.
Did Jared and Renda, this is probably 10 years ago, whatever, there's this old guy, we live in Jamestown, Ohio, up towards Xenia at this time, and it's right at Christmas, the guy lives by himself, his kids don't come and see him anymore, whatever, and so they get him like 5 real scratch-off tickets, and then slide one of the fake ones in there.
Oh.
He got his spectacles on, he's just scratching it off. Throw that one. He goes, oh my God, thank you guys so much. This is the best Christmas I ever had.
You gotta be a special kind of sadist.
Now they're just like looking at each other like, shit.
We gotta go.
Yeah. Said he started putting his shoes on. He's like,
oh yeah, he's gonna get that money.
Where are you going? Up to a gas station so they can cash it. Oh, you think they're gonna cash an $80,000 scratch off ticket?
You got that in the drawer? I'll wait.
Jared goes, hey, dude, flip it over, read the back. And... yep.
Says it can.
So it's like, yeah, that's a fake lottery ticket. And, oh. Jared.
How do you not cry at that point? Because, like, the adrenaline.
I'm so glad I wasn't there, dude. They come back in, like, shoulders just like, oh, we are pieces of shit or what we...
if that ever happened to me, if I did win, you know, if I bought like 6 scratch-off tickets and I hit one for like $10,000 and I'm sitting here with you guys...
Dude,
what were we talking about?
Yeah.
You know, my pupils might dilate for the next... until I leave, but I'm not saying nothing to nobody.
Dude, I was listening to a podcast and... this comedian was saying they did the same thing to their uncle, like it was a family reunion, and so they just get a bunch of them, whatever, and they all give them this one guy or whatever, and the deal was everyone was going to split it if they hit.
Yep.
And so he does just that, scratches it off, got his poker face. Yeah. All nope, nothing. Hey, Unc, you hit anything?
No.
Not a dang thing. All right, I gotta go.
All right, I'll check out some chickens.
Seth just left. Everyone's like, told you he's a no-count son of a bitch.
Yeah, he deserves what he gets at the gas station, I'll tell you that. Sir, we don't sell this brand of fake lotto ticket. Well, let's get back on track here.
Yeah.
We talk about gambling all day. So what's the most memorable incident? Was it you guys ever... come to fisticuffs or
no? Of course not. Hell no.
You can't even take Jared.
I got a couple. I remember we were. I was still in Nelsonville this time, and you were driving that gold K car. You know
what's a K car?
The Dodge. It was a Dodge, right? That little gold car you know what I'm talking about?
Dodge or Chrysler or something. Dodge, I remember the one you're talking about.
I don't know. We just
is it a cop car or is it just like vehicle?
No, neither. It was his personal vehicle.
Oh, okay.
But you had drove up and picked me up to come back for this, for whatever, maybe it was a court or me, or whatever meeting it was, whatever. But I, mom gave me a cigarette and I, I don't even remember where I smoked the cigarette out, but you busted me. It's like, been smoking?
Smoke's coming out of your shirt.
And then we get back, like, hey, Sally wants to talk to you. Oh, he ratted on me, didn't he? It's not ratting when it's your probation officer.
Yeah. That's right.
I mean, he did his job, didn't he? My favorite was, like, I was at Buckeye Hills after I got out. So
you get drug tested for cigarettes, too?
No, but you're not allowed to smoke because I was a minor. Oh, I wasn't allowed to smoke.
It was part of your rules at that
time. Exactly. And so I was clearly had been smoking. Mm-hmm. Another time I came, I was going to Buckeye Hills at this time. I had an early release so we could do this. So this rehab you would do like once a month, I think it was. You're a caseworker or whatever, and all the family members. probation officers, mm-hmm. if you have one, is so we all meet at the courthouse, whatever, just kind of like a review for the last month or whatever. And so this day, I had borrowed my cousin's truck and was supposed to get out at like 1 p.m. to make it to the meeting by 1:30. I got a vehicle now, so I, let's make that 11. And so mm-hmm. And so I get to the courthouse and it's, I remember you were sitting there, you're like on the stand, you're like, all right, Jay, you want to tell everyone what you did today? I was like, oh, shit. Is he on to me? Does he, like...
That's the worst kind when you don't know what did I do?
I don't want to mention the wrong thing.
You know? You start.
Why don't you get started here and I'll take it from the next sentence.
I was like, I have no idea what... And he pulls out the pass that I had forged. I'm like, how did he make it there and back already? He's like, I'm tired of you lying. You forged this, you can get out of school. You got the tater.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
Oh, yeah. It was,
which one was worse, Jared or Jay?
I couldn't tell them apart.
Yeah. The first time when I first met them, I met Jay first, and then I met Jared for the first time. It was just briefly, maybe 6 months later. I couldn't either. And it wasn't so much even that they look alike. They have the same mannerisms. They're both, you know, happy, you know, quick to crack a joke, be in character more so than their regular self in a social setting. So it was like...
And they're both smart enough to adopt the other one's mannerisms when they want to fool you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Boys, I tell you, hey, don't be hating because I got a twin and you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. This
it's
is
pretty
like,
great, I'll be honest.
It was like somebody was like, let's give this twin thing to two people who are really going to take advantage of it. Because I've known plenty of twins and didn't.
What, a lot of people would be like, ah, so you guys ever like switch girlfriends, things like that? No, bro. Oh, go to jail as each other? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Why would you do something that reprehensible and immoral? No, we would go to jail as each other occasionally, commit crimes, things of that nature.
Years ago, I came over to the Funny Bone, and part of Jay's act was talking about his probation officer and drug test.
Yeah. They should be able to tell us apart by scent.
Yeah. That was like at the beginning of that. I remember that specifically. I was like, Greg Warren was headline. I was like, God, dude, my probation officer's here. I was like, man, I want to say something about it, but I don't want it to be lame. He's like, I don't think you can make it lame when you say your probation officer's here. He's
yeah.
Like, you'll be all right, man. Yeah. Just go with your gut. What'd
you think of his performance?
Oh, that was great. I think he's hilarious.
Yeah.
I've been there several times.
Yeah,
absolutely, yeah.
I don't know if it was that night, but I know one night he, out on the stage, made sure to introduce his probation officer to everybody, and that's kind of an awkward moment.
Yeah, yeah.
My probation officer's here. And
I was like, where's Shane? Yeah. Shane, will you stand up?
Some bitch.
Yeah. We all want to acknowledge you. Anybody here ever had a probation officer? Here go one.
I took that time to apologize for praying for your death all those years.
Right.
I actually did that more when I was
I think
adult.
That's just proof that God ain't listening to you.
Yeah. I ain't no... Never mind. I'm going to go to hell.
I asked God for $5. He fell out of the sky right into my lap. He listening to me.
Like, juvenile court was different because, like, you get your court papers and it'd be a month and a half out.
Yeah.
I turned 18 and I was like, oh, I gotta go to court tomorrow?
Yeah.
For something I did today?
Yeah. They're a lot speedier.
Oh.
Because you got money behind that.
Oh, man, I'll tell you, Judge Douthat, that's somebody I really did pray for his death. I was like, look, I just need him to die, Lord, if you're listening, if I got your ear, I just need him to die. Let me get my game plan together here. Mm-hmm. Lord, it don't have to be him, but at least his wife needs something happen.
What did you, truancy, it's something I never really understood, like, especially in a small town, because, like, if I was walking around, like, town or something, my mom would get a call.
No, we'd never just go walking around,
But would it be like
you're
something
in
like...
farm country, bud, you go find a dirt road.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess that's we could do that, too.
Go out to Palms Bridge and,
it never occurred to me to, like... be going to school and then decide not to go. Was that how truancy worked for you? Is that how truancy works in general? Or do you think these kids just plan on not going and it doesn't catch up to them? I mean, like...
I know. I just knew that I wasn't going. It's like... I mean, it would be like mom would like... Of course, it was already kicked off the bus for life, so okay. Mom had to take us to...
Wait. Back up.
All right, real quick.
What does somebody do to get kicked off the bus for life? How many different things do you do?
One. It took one thing.
What was the one thing?
Cover the bus driver's eyes. That's all it takes. And then, I didn't, it was brief. It was very brief.
Acting like it was 5 minutes. 30 seconds at best.
Yeah, it wasn't even that. It was just enough to get a giggle. But, so I got kicked off the school bus for life, but wasn't thinking that, like, mom, dad is going to have to drive us to school. Yeah. Dad's going to be pissed. He's going to be up at 7 o'clock.
Did you guys both do this?
Or no, was it something I did, that you... but since they had to drive us to school, like, not putting two of them on the bus and then driving me, you know. And so I remember the first day, like, because the school bus will pick you up at the middle school, take you to the high school, pick up the high school students, and then head out from there. Pick you up.
I'm still laughing.
So I remember the first day, like, dad picked us up, and he's sitting out there, and he's like, part of his car's on the sidewalk. He's clearly drunk.
Yeah, yeah.
Guns N' Roses.
Yep, yep.
It was a cassette of that day. Of course. I stole it from the Sundry News, gave it to him for Father's Day. I'm a good boy. So he's just jamming to that. What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Yeah,
just cranking it, right? And so we get in the car. He's clearly drunk. Doesn't say a word. We're all in the car, and he just takes the same route that our bus took all the way out, all these country roads or whatever, and then... We get about a mile from the house, whatever. He just pulls over to the side of the road. I'm like, "The hell's going on?" He just got that song playing on the loop, just over and over. And he's like, "Get out!" So we get out of whatever. I'm like, "What the hell going on, Daddy?" And then you hear the school bus come barreling down this gravel road, and just when they get right to the car, he just grabs me and starts beating my ass right in front of the school bus. I was like, oh, it took me a lot of years. I was like, oh, that's very effective.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's... I mean,
they're not letting me back on the bus, but yeah, it humiliated me. Yeah.
Yeah, and it sent a clear message, you know, that this is getting dealt with. Because that's what I was going to say, because like if I did that, like I come from Yellow Springs, which is a hippie liberal town. If you covered the bus drivers, they would have shot you. I mean, they would have found somebody who had a gun from another town far away and shot you. I mean, that was like, there was... I can't even imagine what would have happened to me. But plus, our bus drivers were like, I was convinced that that was a prison release work program because our bus drivers were not from the village.
It's like, that's weird. My school bus driver's name was Robbie Wise. This is very bizarre. I thought the old man putting me in a full Nelson and bouncing my head off the fender of the bus as they were driving past was a little excessive, but hey.
You ever see parents beat their kids in front of you?
Oh, yeah.
Like the point where you had to intervene?
That's part of the job.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He's like, that's the only part I missed.
Yeah. I mean, Friday's Friday, but you know. Did you ever have to intervene, like from somebody like almost killing their kid?
No, I just go to the other room.
Yeah, let it happen. Yeah.
It's called respect.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. How dare I get in the way? That makes sense.
Oh, geez, I'll tell you, I could have... I mean, I always hated getting the hell beat out of me, but boy, I can understand it now as a parent.
Yeah. Do you think the probation officer label, how much are you still wearing that today around here?
Yeah, some, I think. I mean,
still don't go to Taco Bell in order.
Yeah, the... I mean, it's one of those things that in a small town, you never really
shake it.
You know, people, you know, Jay's age, who, you know, Jay and I have become friends, you know, in another life here. But, you know, people your age, you know, when my wife's got a business in town, and when they come into her business and they see me pass through, you know, you almost see them like... You know, I don't know.
Yeah, Spencer Titan, yeah.
And,
I weren't doing nothing.
Yeah, so there was a period there, you know, the 8 years that I worked at the court, the kids that came through at that point, I think, you know, still, when they see me, maybe still, I don't know if nervous is the right word, or
right.
don't really know what to say, you know, that sort of thing.
But I think it's probably like one of those things, like when we were doing the interview with Judge Michaels the other day, was Don...
The principal?
Yeah, what was his name?
Jenkins.
Don Jenkins comes in, and it's like, still, you don't... To think of calling him Don was like crazy to me. I was still Mr. Jenkins, you know. So it's kind of one thing. Like, if you grow up calling somebody Mr. Jenkins, if like you grew up the principal, then
yeah. I had a teacher when I was in high school. Actually, from middle school, he was like my reading and history teacher in middle school. Then in high school, he was the guidance counselor, and then right before I graduated, became the principal. But the coolest part about it was he was always the voice of reason. And everything that we ever dealt with, like even when he was my teacher, he was like, we had a couple crazies and a couple aggressive teachers. He was the very even keel teacher. As a guidance counselor, if I got in trouble or a group of my friends got in trouble, we'd have one teacher yelling at us. He'd be the one that was like kind of bringing down to like a conversation level. And then when he became the principal, it was like, okay, I'm not gonna benefit from any of this, but I know the kids beneath me are gonna at least get a fair shake. And the coolest part about it was, from the time he was a reading teacher to the time he was the principal, he was known as Gudge. His name was Mr. Gudgel, but it was just Gudge as a nickname, and he was okay with that. So it wasn't like a first name, which is too proper for children or whatever. But he was like Judge Gudge. You know, he's just very even-keeled, man of very few words. And I felt like in lieu of like kind of like the drill sergeant leadership tactic that I had, he found a very moderate way of dealing with what I would consider, because I think Yellow Springs has a small population, but inside of that probably more drugs per capita than the average. Not like meth and coke and stuff like that, but probably more weed than the average.
Certainly more weed, I would imagine. It seems to me like it's like a... It reminds me so much of Athens, mm-hmm. but on such a smaller scale.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no mistake why so many kids from Yellow Springs end up going to... OU. In fact, every serious girlfriend I've ever had, or girl that's been in my life that went to college, went to OU.
Yeah, I mean, some of them were that remote branch out of Chillicothe, yeah. but it was still OU.
It's still know? OU. Yeah, it's still that satellite sky. It's still come home. Come home, supper. Where do you feel now? You said you work at the prison.
Yeah. So,
do you administrate, or are you carrying a gun, or what do you got?
Working in corrections.
So okay.
I'm running a block of 145 men, felony offenders, and
what is this? Maximum, medium.
I guess you'd call it medium. This is a reception center, so everybody who goes to prison in this part of the state goes there first.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everything from child support to murder.
Interesting.
I've heard that is the worst place to go. Like, people just can't wait to go to their... Because you go there and then they establish what institution you'll go to or whatever.
Yeah, that's where I work at. That's what they do. And it's locked down, you know, a lot more of the time than it is when they get to a parent camp later where they're going to end up. So,
mm-hmm.
so just exactly what you're saying.
So they'd be, like, observing these people, see how they're acting, and does their behavior then help decide what... institution they go to, or is it all based on their level of felony, or how does that, like, because if they're locked in a cell by themselves for 20 some hours a day, there's not a whole hell of a lot they can do to affect the outcome of
where they're going,
right?
Yeah, they can find a way.
They still got to shit and piss every day.
But I mean, you're exactly right in that they don't want to be there. You know, it's...
And how long will they be there?
Usually 30 to 45 days. Okay. Sometimes things will keep them there longer, but, you know, it's really not a fun place at all for them. You know, when they get to some of these other places, they've got a lot more freedom within the prison to be out of their cell, for example.
Right.
So...
Now, is this state-run or is this a private institution?
It's state.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts... generically, between state institutions and the private-run, subcontracted institutions? Do you have any experience or anybody that talks about that in your line of work?
I don't have any experience in that.
Is there much talk about that moving into this area where these prisons would become privatized or maybe building new private prisons? Is that something that's even being talked about?
Not that I know of. Okay. I went through some training with people that worked at a private facility, and it seemed like it was laid out, the structure of it was very much the same as the public-run facilities, mm-hmm. but I'd only be speculating at, you know, what...
How much better or worse?
Better or worse, yeah.
Sure. So this new gig, how did your years as a probation officer, how does that affect what you do on a daily basis at this job?
Well, it's mainly dealing with a lot of people. He was a probation officer.
Do you see those people come?
Have you seen that?
I've definitely seen some people come through, and it's interesting to see how people turn out. Mm-hmm. The some of the folks that really seemed like a lost cause 20 years ago, have great jobs and great families and doing great things. And, you know, some other people, you know, see them at the prison. They've been there 5 times.
And do they have to come to CRC every time when they come back to prison?
Yeah. And so, that's interesting to see. And I think, you know, the experience in law enforcement and probation obviously prepared me, I guess, to know how to deal with guys that are really good at what they do.
Uh-huh.
You know, really good at being manipulative criminals. And,
right.
So it's interesting. And I think the fact that, you know, these guys that are in there for very petty, you know, I guess no felonies, petty, but, guys that are in there for drugs, for example, are now, you know, sleeping in a cell with somebody that's there for murder and,
right.
you know, and rape and people who have, you know, slit the necks of 6 people and, or people that aren't into drugs are now in there with people, you know, who are drug dealers off the streets of Columbus or Cincinnati. And so it's a very odd mix of people at a reception center because everybody's funneled into one place. And as far as for the time that they're with us, it doesn't matter, you know, what they're there for. I mean, sex offenders are dealt with differently, but aside from that, if, you know, whether it's drugs, rape, murder, felonious assault, whatever it is, they're all grouped together. So at any given time, I've got 145 guys, and it runs the gamut of charges from, you know, guys that are, you know, and very much like dealing with people out on the street, some of these folks seem very normal, and you think, how in the hell did they end up in prison? And, you know, you look up their file, and they cut somebody's throat, or, so you just can't judge a book by its cover, and especially in that environment, because typically the people that are the most dangerous are also the ones that are the least problem and
very charismatic.
Hello, CO, welcome to... welcome back. We're glad to see you today, and... You know, those are the guys that you really got to watch, and I think it's a dangerous environment, and people, if you ever want to feel just terrible about society, you know, you spend a few hours in there and think, I don't ever want to run into these people, or for my kids to run into these kind of people on the streets.
Yeah.
They're really some terrible people.
What about, how often do they get visitations there?
Usually a certain day of the week.
So it can be once a week if you have people that
and then they got people that'll put money on their books so that they can buy things in the commissary and that kind of thing. And, you know,
Is there a set amount of money that you're allowed to have on your books?
Yeah, there is, but I don't deal with that directly, so I don't know.
I was just wondering, because that Aaron Hernandez or whatever, he's a millionaire.
Yeah.
He can only have, like, you know,
$30
$118, and he's like, where's my other $38 million? Look, Ma, I love you and everything, but...
let's get some more ramen in this.
Yeah, there's some great stories come out of those guys, though, understanding... You know, talking to them about where they came from and how they ended up there, and sometimes they're all manipulative,
right?
In that environment, you wouldn't, who wouldn't be,
right?
But when you really hear the story, like one guy told me that he's probably 22 or 23 years old, and he said, I just asked him one day, what got you in here, and he He said, well, I grew up in Columbus in a neighborhood where there was a little corner market, been run by a foreign guy my whole life. He says, since I was old enough to walk, I've been walking from my house into that store. And he said, known the guy my whole life. He said, one day I took some pills and got messed up, put on a ski mask about halfway.
Yeah, yeah.
And oh, God.
He said, I walked into that store with a gun and said, I'm here to rob you, give me everything. And, and he was like, Charlie?
Yeah. Charlie,
put that damn gun down. So, those are the kind of stupid, the gun thing's going to get him 3 years mandatory, yeah. And on top of whatever the robbery got him, and, all over stealing some damn Twizzlers or something.
It's heartbreaking. I mean, it's got to be a bit of, but also you've,
yeah, it's like, it's at the same.
It's like, they did, it is weird how you can go down this path. And like you're saying, the one kid, you can, he had good parents, when you were a probation officer, and you just couldn't believe how far off track this kid had gotten when he's raised by a good family and things like that. But
it's always something. Yeah, there's always a spark of something that either happens in the brain or it happens in the story that has something sets the train off the tracks. You know what I mean? And it's like some people are good at getting their train back on the tracks or slowing down so it never derails in the first place. And some people seem to live off the tracks. You know what I mean? Like, I can't be on the tracks. I can't even be in the train.
Tracks make me nervous. Yeah,
tracks. Oh, God. Too straight. I need to swerve. Yeah, I can't imagine. So do you, like, engage these guys daily? Is that part of, like, what makes your job actionable, is to, like, interact with the people that you're overseeing, is to actually kind of know a little bit about them? Or do you, like, some people you just don't even ask?
I think it's what makes it tolerable.
Yeah. Right?
Maybe out of sheer boredom, if nothing else. Like, this guy's going to hang around and bullshit with me half the day. I might as well tell me a good story.
Because when you were telling me that story, it reminded me of construction. I always wanted to work with a guy. He didn't have to be, because I was a hard worker. I was like a carpenter's assistant. I didn't really mind working with a carpenter who wasn't hardworking if he had good stories.
Right.
If he was a hard worker, he didn't have to say anything. We could just get work done all day. But if he had good stories, I didn't mind doing the lion's share of the work, because I just wanted to have the day go by. I think that's what this whole podcast craze, I think, is about, is I'd rather listen to a good story or a conversation than I would the depressing news or, somebody just tell me about their damn problems all day.
Well, at least we can help bring these uplifting stories about the juvenile
system, drugs, and incarceration. That doesn't make you feel, the listener, better about where you are right now. Because I know a lot of people listen while they're at work. And I know almost every job I ever had, I felt like I was showing up to prison if it was an indoor job. It was like one of those things, like construction felt like I was free. Like, you can work in construction and get nothing done some days just because you're just out. You're just walking around. It's like being in high school or something. And then I had jobs where I would be in a restaurant and I'd have to be inside all day. And it just felt like, if I got to step outside for just, I started smoking again when I worked in the restaurant just so I could take that 5 minute break. Yeah. Cause if you don't smoke, you can't take a break at a restaurant. You're
watching all these other, cause they smoke, they get these breaks. But like,
how can they get freedom? Oh, they're killing themselves. Oh, okay. Well, I'd like to kill myself too then.
When I first got hired at that job, they had had an event one day where your family came with you and they, pinned your badge and all those kinds of things. And my mom came over with my wife and I that day. And so they took us into one of these blocks where the guys live. And I remember my mom, peeked her head in one of these cells and she was saying, that's not that bad. They've got a window, that sort of thing. And, speaking as to, could always be worse.
Yeah.
So, the correction officer that day, keyed the lock and opened the door. Of course, there's some guy laying there eating peanut butter. What the fuck is going on here? And so he tells that guy to get out.
Yeah.
So he walks out. you know, he says, walk in there and, you know, get a feel for it. And she walks in, he slams the damn door behind her, and she all, you know, just like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, instant.
Like, yeah, this sucks.
This is not as good.
Where the hell my peanut butter?
It's like when we say, when I hear a well-to-do person say that poor people in this country have it better than 90% of poor people in the rest of the world. That is true. But it's like poor people in general, no matter what context you're talking about, it kind of sucks. You know, on a very high level, it does suck. So it's almost like one of those things where I remember I built a prison and I was looking at the cells and I was like, this is all the room I would need to live in. You know what I mean? Like I'd rent an apartment this size if it was cheap enough, you know? And then once we got all the hardware in and the doors came in and the glass goes in and then they painted that gray color, like the more and more it was just like, I didn't even want to be in there with the doors open. Like it just was like claustrophobic. Yeah.
Not to mention you bring those motherfuckers in and telling you what to do all the time. That is the real bad part.
I think that's really what for me would be the biggest bummer about the whole situation would, you know, like one, you're sitting there. It's like my parents' punishment. Like sit here and just think about
what you've done
and how everybody around you feels about it. You know, because I think that's what would drive me the most.
Like, you know what? The hell with you guys. I need just a minute to figure out how I feel about this.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out who I am.
Ass,
all right? So do you have a...
Dude, did that stop recording?
It did. It probably battery died, but we got this one still going. It'll back up whatever we got, and it probably just quit. Because I checked it a few minutes ago. We'll wrap up soon, but... is there anything that's like life lessons that you feel like, you know, between the police officer probation and now working at the prison, is there something that you've woken up to? I don't know how old you are, but you look like you're about 45.
I'm 42. But
okay. All right. Well, I didn't want to go too high. I was going to say 60, but no. You look like I'm 41.
You look like a 60-year-old black man. But that's just, tell me if I'm wrong.
I think the biggest difference for me is that I'm older and more calm in dealing with situations at this point. I think there's not much in dealing with offenders. There's not much that I haven't seen or done at this point. And so I find that I'm working with 22-year-old guys, and I see them, I see me in them.
Yeah.
And I see, you know, I just want to shake them sometimes and say, settle the hell down.
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't have to be full piss and vinegar all the time.
Yeah.
You know, but that was me 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when you get inside those walls at a prison or even working at a court or in a school, you get inside those walls, the smallest things can seem like the most important things in the whole world.
Yeah.
And I think when you get out and you see the world and you get away from it for a little while, you realize, you know, is it really that big a deal? You know, some of these things that happen. And I see that even in the prison today, you know. You know, I work with some of these young guys that are so fired up and love what they do and they're excited about it. And I just sit down.
Yeah.
let me handle this.
Yeah.
And I go and I talk to somebody and I settle their ass down a little bit. But that could have been so much different 20 years ago. And so that's probably, for me, that's been the biggest change, I guess, or the biggest thing I've learned is just, you know, settle down, you know, let people settle down.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can throw gas on the fire and just make it a whole lot worse. So
that's really brilliant, because I think a lot of people in your, not necessarily that I've known a lot of people in law enforcement, I've known a few people in law enforcement, but the one thing that I would say that between the people that I respect and the people that I'm like, I don't really get that, are the people who are able to look back and see the change that they've had on their career. And that goes for anything. I think any, what I would call a high demand career where the stakes are high. Some people are like, I've been doing it the same from day one. And then there's people that are like, no, I realized over time, even if just looking back, that I've changed tremendously in the way I approach this whole thing, or how I feel about people in general, because some people, by the time they're your age, would be completely turned off to humanity if they had gone through the same.
I think I'm one of those people.
You were on the other side of the cycle.
Yeah. But I still hate everybody a lot.
I would say...
Outside of present company, of course.
I'll say, for the record, I think Jay hates himself, and therefore it manifests as him thinking that he hates other people, but it's... He ain't forgave himself.
No, I hate when people say that about me.
I hate people that say that to me. I'll break their stuff. thanks a lot, Shane, for talking to us about what you do, because it's intensely personal, but it's also one of those things where I feel like who knows how many people are listening to this, will listen to this one day, and be dealing with something with a child that's going through the system. And I think that what opened my eyes the most about with the talk with Judge Michael and even with you is I didn't expect to hear such rational thoughts, such human ideas. You know, I thought I would hear more of a government or institutionalized idea. Yeah, bad people do bad things and then we step on their throat, which is certainly an appropriate response for some people. But the sleight of hand that you use, the light touch idea is something that I wasn't expecting to hear in both of these interviews. So it's inspirational to me to know that my son, who's 14 and has not yet faced any disciplinary action, but I always think, like, this kid's so calm right now, he's been too good for too long. He's gonna get to hang out with the wrong people and the wrong thing happens. So the advice I always give him is it's not snitching if somebody committed a crime and another person got hurt. I was like, you got to think about all the factors. I was like, if somebody tells on you because you doodled on your desk or whatever and no harm, no foul, but now you're in trouble or whatever, okay, maybe that's snitching. I said, but if you're hanging out with a bunch of guys and they're about to break into somebody's house or whatever and you tell them not to and they do it anyway and you leave or whatever, I was like, you're now accessory to a crime. I was like, that's not anything you want to be. You got to keep your head up on swivel and figure out who your friends really are. And I look back and I'm telling him this story, and then I find out Jay's been busted for aggravated robbery a handful of times at the same age, basically, as my son. And I think it's a matter of how close you are with your friends at that point. And I was close enough to my friends at that point where I would have gone the other direction. So I always wonder, what's it going to be, the linchpin for my son? And I know other people with kids are always wondering, like, what the hell's...
And my friends were, like, adults, you know, so it was like... I was 13, 14, hanging out with 20 and 21-year-olds, you know.
So the influences.
I mean, and not, I mean, that's everything, because I was a great thief, you know, if there is such thing. I mean, I could steal a radio, leave the music there. You know, but I mean, in hindsight, it's obvious now that they were using me, because I would just go,
You're a juvenile, so you can't get no real trouble, which is not really a thing, right?
It's certainly a lighter sentence, but... Yeah, that was.
You still got to sit in the damn court and talk to people.
That was certainly part of it.
But you think about the 20 people that come to my mind during that time period that you were a juvenile and involved in the courts and that sort of thing. The people who were your friends at that time, out of 20 that come to my mind, I mean, 15 of them really turned out pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
The other ones are dead or in hell, or in prison. But that's just what you were saying earlier. Was like the ones that were living like hell 15 years ago turned out pretty good, and some of the ones that were doing good back then, you know.
There is a period of getting the let out. I think I saw it with some girls that I knew, or women that I've known over my life, even when I was young, who were mothers really young, raising kids, putting the husband through college or whatever. They divorce after the kids get a little bit older, and then now mother is just wilding out. She's living her childhood again, and it's like one of those things where it's like, I'm pretty sure I got a lot of my let out when I was between 15 and 25, which, if I hadn't gotten it out then, I can't even imagine what I'd be doing today, because I still been known to get the let out. So I think the more hell you raise, but it also sets a dangerous precedent, because I've seen Jay go through a cycle of being able to go as wild as he wants to and then as stable as he wants to.
There's still room for improvement, Shane. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, yeah,
well, that's the case for all of us.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when we get to the age that you are and I am, and we're not dead and we're not hooked on meth or something crazy, we've done okay.
Yeah, really. And that's really like, that's the goal isn't to win. It's to just kind of survive, stay alive, and enjoy yourself. There's no real winning at this thing.
Yeah, you know, it'd be fun. Me, you, Jared, Adrian, and Judge Michaels do one.
Oh, maybe we get a recap. I want to do Jared.
He sent me a message the other day just saying how much fun he had and how much he loved doing this kind of stuff and things like that. And Jared's an idiot. And he doesn't have a real release to be funny anymore because he's not doing stand-up. Do comedy. So that son of a bitch is fine.
He was winging it. He was really in there. That was fun. That was fun. This was fun. And maybe in a month or so we get down and get... Because comments... I said on the last podcast, if anyone had questions for the Judge Michael, and I already got like a handful of questions or things that we should be talking about. So hopefully we'll get the same thing from this one and we'll have some direction we can take it. But I still like this whole freestyle, sit down, have a conversation, see where it goes. That's what we do whenever we record just the two of us. And
it's called Totally Unrelated. And it's and most podcasts are like comedy. I like to bring the law enforcement into it.
His past discretion.
Corrections officers, you know. Yeah.
Maybe we can get a cop that we can interview in the commission of a crime.
Yeah.
Just a little B&E or something.
Until then, will you tase Adrian?
just so we can move on film.
We'll go Facebook Live.
Yeah. I've edited it there. That was perfect.
Thank you.
For listening, download more episodes from the Podbean app. Also available at iTunes and Stitcher or at totallyunrelated.com.